Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
What's it mean?
11.
Friends don't play.
Stop it! You're freaking her out!
He's freaking me out!
The upside down.
Do you understand what he's talking about?
No.
I found the chocolate pudding!
Oh God, please tell me it's not the kid.
I need him to hide!
Warnings are for coffee and contemplation.
Holy shit.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
Yeah, I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, the unofficial Stranger Things podcast. And we have just watched the fourth episode of Stranger Things 4. That's 4 for 4, like Wendy's, motherfuckers.
4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4.
No, we can't say that.
That's 4, 4, 4, 4. That's the most, that's a local ad listener, and it's
yeah, nobody's going to get that reference.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to get that reference.
No.
Anyway, yeah, we just finished the episode. We're going to recap it, talk about our favorite moments, try to find some Easter eggs that we call Eggos. If you're listening to the show for the first time, welcome and thank you to our old veteran listeners. Welcome back. We're having a blast. We're actually watching this slower than most people probably because we have to stop and recap these episodes and it gets exhausting. But we're having a great time. I know that the reviews online for this season of the show are very, very positive. I'm eager to keep going. We may finish today. That's the goal. We may not. You don't even know what day this is because it's the magic of the internet and audio, right? But it's a day.
Yeah, here's a hint. It ends in the word day.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Saturday. But yeah, we're barreling through. Thank you for joining us on this journey. A few business things right off the top real quick. You can email the show anytime at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. That's streamingthingspod@gmail.com.
Email.
We've been getting a lot of listener emails and very excited to read them. So those are heartening. So keep those coming. You can also subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/streamingthings. That's patreon.com/streamingthings.
Patreon.
It would mean the world to us.
The world.
If you subscribed.
Subscribe.
Maybe throw some chump change our way if you got it. If you don't, that's fine. And I need you to hear this next part very carefully because you're not hearing it. I can't say it any more clearly. Okay? For free, at no cost to you whatsoever, except a mere few seconds of your time. You can rate and review the podcast on whatever app that you're listening, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, other ones I haven't heard of, wherever it is.
Ask Jeeves. It could be a one word review, like give us 5 stars and then write good.
Yeah.
Leave 5 stars. Great.
Sure.
Leave 1 star. Great.
Yeah. Or an emoji. I saw some of those on competitors, just emojis, which
there you go.
I assume are bots, but hey,
eggplant.
And by the way, if you know any bots that are looking for a new podcast, send them our way because they seem to be leaving five stars. Mm-hmm. We need that because there's a couple other Stranger Things podcasts out there. And as great as I'm sure they are, we want to be number one.
We want to crush our enemies into the ground.
That's true.
I went to school of H.R. Pickens and I want to be like H.R. Pickens and crush my enemies into the ground.
Yeah.
I just want to drink the blood of my enemies, you guys.
Yeah.
That's all we want to do here at Streaming Things. So if you could do that at least to help us out, that'd be wonderful. But on the Patreon, there's a ton of extra content. Steve, built an entire D&D trivia game, Stranger Things themed for us. We did that and posted that online. So check that out if you have extra time and extra cash.
If you want to be infuriated, be like Enza, listener of the show, who does subscribe to our Patreon and get really mad at the music trivia round of that game.
She was so Chris mad.
And Andy cannot figure out what the songs are that I'm playing for them.
I threw a little accidental Cyndi Lauper shade. So if you want to make fun of me, that's on our Patreon. But this episode that we're talking about right now is Chapter 4, Dear Billy. But before I go any further, we got a little extra special something these days for you. We're doing Stranger Things themed Mad Libs. Steve's, kick us off.
Will, are you there? That is the title of this episode's Mad Libs. Starting off, we need a part of the body, plural.
Feet.
Ooh, feet. I like that one. Adjective.
Let's go with intelligent.
Last name.
Smith.
Fuck. Smith fuck? verb ending in ing.
Whacking.
Whacking in my tool shed.
Number.
Oh, can you change it to schmacking?
Yeah, schmack.
Schmack.
Number 420.
Dope. Adjective.
Lonely.
Plural noun.
Geese.
Why'd you say it like that?
I don't know.
Geese. Let me tell you about my geese.
Verb ending in ing.
Menstruating.
Gross. Mm. Adjective.
Fierce.
Verb.
Throw.
Same plural noun. Which? Oh, is that geese? I guess that's geese.
More geese.
Is it geese or geeses?
English major over here. Noun.
Ocean.
Type of building.
Tudor.
Like a Tudor home?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll write Tudor home. Verb.
Relax.
Silly word.
Heath bar.
Heath bar. Exclamation.
Confound it all.
Confound it all. Verb.
Toss.
And lastly, plural noun.
Friends.
Don't.
Bye.
And we will be lying to you if you said we did not read the outcome of this Mad Libs at the end of the episode. So stay tuned to figure out, Will, are you there?
We don't know if he's there or not, but we'll find out soon. On to the main event. We've just watched Chapter 4, Dear Billy. And Netflix describes it thusly. Max is in grave danger and running out of time. A patient at Penhurst Asylum has visitors. Elsewhere in Russia, Hopper is hard at work.
Dun, dun, dun.
I pictured like a Law and Order, dun, dun, dun at the dun. End of that.
Executive producer Dick Wolf.
So we open the show with the boys and the government. And I took silly notes this time, so we'll see how this goes. I got the boys and the government.
That's funny because I literally wrote Cali boys and the government.
Wow, we are one in the, man, wow. We are on the same page over here. I mean, we have literal separate pages. But we're on the same one.
You're in the same book.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
No. We're not only on the same page, Chris. We're on the same syllable. All right.
Dang.
Yeah.
So what is it? It's Mike, it's Jonathan, and it's Will. Mm-hmm. And we got like the new lady who's like reminiscent of the evil, like silenced pistol lady from season one, but she's like the good version.
Officer Frazier, I think was her name.
Really?
Yeah. I think it was Connie Frazier, I think was her name.
And then the two like agents, and these are all like Dr. Owen's agents, and they're trying to explain to the boys what's going on. And she gives Mike a note that was written by Eleven. And they're saying, hey, Eleven went off to get her powers back. It was her choice. You guys got to sit tight. Hawkins is in grave danger, but you can't tell anybody in Hawkins without endangering Eleven. Right. Because the evil faction of the government is listening at all times. As Steve was right, there's factions in the government. He predicted that as a major plot point of this season. I'm throwing it out there.
Hashtag he deserves Steve a prize. Was right. Hashtag Steve was right.
Steve has three Emmys. But that's not enough. He needs another award for predicting this plot line.
I'm just saying, when are you guys going to get on board and finally listen to me and listen to my word as what it is? The gospel, all right? I'm spitting hot fire. I'm telling truths right and left. But no, everyone's always doubting me. Andy's like, what? You don't like Heath bars? I'm like, no, old man.
Listener, just know that if there's a Heath bar that's out there that hasn't been eaten yet and you're in range, it's your duty to your country to give it a shot.
So let's tell the story real quick. Andy's got a big bag of a medley of different candy bars
like
that he
Halloween
bought.
Candy.
Yeah, that he bought for the binge fest of Stranger Things. Okay, and we hear him wander into his kitchen, shuffling with the gait of an elderly man, which makes sense as you'll soon find out. Mm-hmm. And then we hear him exclaim, "Ooh, Heath bars! I didn't know these were in here." And he comes running back in the living room all excited, and Steve and I are laughing. And he's like, "What's so damn funny, you sons of bitches?" Which is weird and rude of him to say. Yeah. And we said, "Why are you so excited about the Heath bars?" Because just so you know, what's also in there? Reese's Pieces, Rolos, Kit Kats, a bunch of far more delicious candy bars. But he was so excited that he found the treasure that is a Heath bar. And to this very moment, he doesn't know what's so damn funny about that.
I'm just saying, you guys are missing out on the finer things in life.
I'm not saying, like, I think Heath bars are fine, but I've never once been even moderately excited about their existence.
See, Stephen, your word is the gospel of the devil.
Yeah.
And I want to hear no more. Yay. Not today, Satan.
Blasphemy.
Not today, Satan. Yeah.
Blasphemy.
You're over there speaking blasphemy about Heath bars, Steve. So anyway, that's what's going on
in our lives.
Yeah. Mike reads the note. It's from L, and she says, "Hey, I'm going to get my superhero powers back from L," which I was so giddy when I read that. I was like, nice. Yes, queen. Slay. Because, of course, famously last episode, she pointed out that he never tells her that he loves her anymore. And he always signs his letters from Mike instead of love. Mm-hmm. So she very pointedly says from L. And I didn't even take it in like a petty way. She just like, you know what? You're right. I don't love you. You know,
I dump your ass.
Dump your ass. That's implicit. I just love that. You guys also, I saw you both notice that as well. And you liked it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's getting his comeuppance.
Indeed. Indeed. So we cut to Robin and Nancy arriving at the school, which is where we ended last episode. So the gang's all back together, breaking into Mrs. Kelly, the counselor's records. Of course, last we left Max, she was witnessing the vision of the clock, which does not bode well for her. And she recounts all of that and what she's discovered about herself to the rest of the gang. "Hey, I think I'm about to die because I've been getting a lot of headaches, as did Fred and Chrissy. And now I'm seeing visions. So I got about 24 hours to live."
I want to point out that I think Chris was right. Hashtag Chris was right. Because last episode, Chris was like, "Oh, Vecna's going after people who feel guilty."
Yeah.
And
I wasn't going to harp too much about that, guys, because I'm a humble man.
Hey, I am a kind, godly voice, and I want to make sure that I give the devil his due.
Thanks, buddy.
And it's sad, though, because in this case, it is just trauma that they feel unfounded guilt.
In every case.
Even that, he's still like, "Hey, I'm coming for you."
Yep.
I don't know. I think it might be founded in Fred's case specifically.
Fred specifically. Yeah, the rest of them less so.
Yeah.
Sure. But at the same time, and I'm going to talk about this at great length at the end of this discussion, but also we're going to hurry because we want to watch episode 5 and get some Indian food really badly. but I think that there's a huge thematic element to what's going on more than any other season. And I am so here for it. But even in Fred's case, I mean, we all make mistakes, some of them grave mistakes in life. Right. Mm-hmm. And I always try to have empathy, but you could see he's a kid. He panicked.
Sure, yeah.
He panicked. He ran. It's not like he's like more at fault necessarily than other people.
It's not like he saw that burning car and went,
"Hell,
good."
Victor murdered innocent people, you know what I mean? But he made a mistake in war. Like, you know, I think that it's very much on purpose that we see all these different angles of life mistakes. But yeah, I think it's a really interesting horror villain to, because you've seen that, like, he feeds on the fear a lot, right? But to feed on the guilt. That's awesome. I think it's really, really neat. Then we cut to Lucas and the lamp is my note there. So Lucas arrives at the school late. Remember, he fled from Jason and the other douchers, and he shows up and Steve almost beats the fuck out of him with a lamp. Yeah. Very close. Very close.
He rode his bike 8 miles to get there.
I know.
And
I
ran.
I can't even ride a bike. Is that hard?
8 miles is not that far on a bike.
Okay.
But I mean, if you,
at his speed though,
if you're on a road that you'll zip that right by. But if you're going like what he probably was, which is like through the grass, up the hills and stuff, like
yeah,
that's some effort. So
I was wondering too, and this is the dumbest thing for any dumb idiot like me to be thinking of the entire time I was watching that scene, but it was my second viewing. But I was thinking, I wonder when they shot that, did they have Lucas jog in place off screen, or did they like spritz him with some water to make him look sweaty? So is he pretending to be out of breath? Is that acting?
You know, they definitely probably spritzed him for the effect of sweat, but they also probably, I would imagine, or
it might raised be, his heartbeat a little
it
bit.
It might be down to the actor as well. The actor might have also like, I feel like I need to get myself out of breath too.
Sure. I was just wondering,
I know
what would I do? I think I would probably try to run around. But then if you got to do like 13 takes, you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. I know the voice actor. Do you remember Dash from The Incredibles? The little
kid
that would sprint fast. That actor has said like he would go out in the hallway outside of the recording booth and run like laps before he was supposed to have his like out of breath lines.
Yeah, so, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, wondering in my own little noggin. And then we cut to Erica. And there's a scene between Erica and Jason. And I really like this scene. So Jason shows up at the Sinclair household to find out if Lucas is there and if not, where he's been. And he really tries to bully Erica, crack down on her. He's just a pretty menacing, like borderline sociopathic guy, right? We're finding more and more out that Jason's not all there, perhaps driven mad by what happened with Chrissy.
Sure, yeah.
But I like to think that as a head jock, he was just always probably going to do criminal things. Right. And so, but Erica
is your own bias.
No, not at all. Erica, he's met his match in Erica, though. She's not to be bullied or trifled with in any way.
God help that man who goes up against Erica, who was painting her lead figurines, by the way. I love how they're really leaning into
how big of a D&D head she is.
Such a nerd. Yeah. When last season she was so against, like, I'm not a nerd.
Nerd.
I'm cool. I'm a cool math whiz. All right.
It all started with My Little Pony.
She's a brony.
My Little Pony is the gateway drug of nerds. Everybody knows it. Mm-hmm. It starts with My Little Pony. Next thing you know, it's the heroine of D&D.
Crack. I need some more of that Rainbow Dash.
And then we get to this little scene in the Wheeler basement with Steve, Dustin, and what's his little Lucas. And then Max is off to the side writing her letters. I love this. How the show acknowledges all of the questions that you're asking yourself in that moment, right? And it even goes so far as to acknowledge that the timeline doesn't work, right? So it just calls itself out. It's really meta the way that they're, you know, because through the audience surrogate is Steve. And he's like, this doesn't make any sense. Okay, so you're saying it's the Vecna's first victim was Victor. That was 30 years ago. I don't know. How the fuck does that make sense? He just hasn't killed anyone since. Like, and that's all the questions that were bouncing around my noggin at the time. So I really appreciated it. Was like, hey, we didn't screw this up.
We're going to answer these questions eventually.
Yeah. And it's kind of cool because it's like this halfway point and it's like, I relax, like, oh, okay. You know, instead of getting worried that this was going down a way that I wouldn't like.
And I like how they kind of flip the script on the series, because usually it's Dustin who's like, here's this really insane, crazy thing. Duh. But Steve Harrington's there like, no, that doesn't work here. That's not applicable. There's questions to be had.
You could use a little humility, Dustin.
Yeah.
That was really, really funny meta joke for sure. And then we cut to, we don't cut, but Robin and Nancy burst in and they tell us their plan. So they plan on impersonating like, was it masters or even doctoral?
Yeah, I feel like they
college
were
age students.
Well, thesis is masters, right? And then,
yeah.
Dissertation is doctorate. PhD. So they're like master's level college psychology students is what they're going to impersonate. And in the 80s, it was very easy. You just got to print something off. Transcript, done, right? There's no watermarks or anything like that.
I was born in the wrong
generation. Yeah, we could have been monsters back then.
Crushed this shit.
And criminals, apparently.
Brought it up.
What we're talking about is criminal.
But we would have gotten away with it.
Yeah, well, if it wasn't for you meddling kids. Having us born 30 years later.
But yeah, they want to impersonate these two students, but they have designated Steve as the quintessential babysitter because we all know his track record with babysitting, right? He's great at it.
He's batting 1,000.
But they're not babies anymore, as Nancy said. She's like, actually, I think it's worse than that. That's funnier because she's like, basically, no, it's not that. They actually can take care of themselves. But you're way too dumb to pull off what I need in this situation.
They're babysitting you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of funny. We cut to Murray and Joyce, and there's this funny little exchange in what I think is a hotel room. And you know, Joyce is really trying to get a hold of the kids, which turns out they're not doing great. And Murray's like, look, we got to go. And he has a funny exchange where he says, there's a few things in life you can be late to, like a one-year-old's birthday party, for instance. That little idiot doesn't know. But a ransom meeting, you have to be on time to. He hangs up the phone and they head out. And then it cuts to a scene between Enzo, who we find out his name is Antonov in this episode, talking to Hopper in line at the prison, Kamchatka prison.
Kombucha.
Yeah, the kombucha prison. And he gives him his estimation of his odds of success for actually escaping. And again, just to remind everybody who's actually on episode 4 with us, Hopper is supposed to bust himself out of prison, right? And he's got a plane ride home is all Enzo has secured.
Yeah. Enzo has secured him the method to leave Russia, but it's on Hop to leave the prison.
Right. Which you would think in itself would be its own trick, you know?
Yeah. And Enzo goes from giving him 50-1 odds to 101. So,
well, he remembers that Steve McQueen, the Cooler King, actually didn't make it. And he's like, you know what? Actually, it's even harder than I thought. It's 100-1. And I love the whole idea of like this Russian prison guard being a huge fan of American pop culture.
Yeah.
He'd be like Steve McQueen, the Cooler King, you know,
see Great Escape. That was a thing, though. I remember hearing people who would like go over to the Soviet Union of that time and all the people that lived there be like, oh, I really want American jeans. Get me jeans. Condiments, and I love them.
You know what I really need more than anything on world is Heath Bar. So fucking delicious, Heath I hear.
Motherland, there's Heath Bar here. Milk and
mayonnaise. Do you want this Butterfinger, Antonov?
Yes!
Yes. We cut back to the, what I wrote was government golfers. Those two seemingly dud agents sitting there watching golf,
seemingly being the operative word.
Absolutely.
Here.
Wow.
Jonathan calls them something. I can't tell if they're their names, but he calls one of them Paunch. And I think that's the dude who lasts a little bit longer, but I couldn't tell. I was like, is that the real name or is that like a derogatory? Well, like he's paunchy.
What was the other name? Like,
we'll address that in the ego segment, guys.
Oh, gotcha. You got it.
I gotcha.
All right.
But yeah, they're sitting there watching some golf and Jaybird hatches a plan to call his pizza friend, order some pizza and bust on out of there. Meanwhile,
I got to say, before you move on, this whole season so far, Jonathan's been having this like crisis of like motivation or who he is, but when Mike and Will are having that exchange where they're kind of they're kind of talking to each other, but then Jonathan shows up and he's like, well, then it's up to us then. That was a moment where I was sort of like, fuck yes, Jaybird's back. He's finally on the saddle. He's on the right track. He thrives
on this drama,
dude. This is when he's in his element. And that was such a, I don't know if you guys noticed it, but like I was sitting on the couch next to Chris, and when Jonathan has that line and the camera pans over to him, I was like, yes.
He did a fist pump. If you can't hear the fist pumping, that's what's happening on Steve's end over there.
Jaybird's
back. Whoa, that didn't sound good. The fist is pumping on Steve's end.
Steve's fisting it up, you guys.
That was my other hand.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, I agree with you. I think it was really cool. There's actually a big scene there where, you know, Mike's having this crisis, kind of trying to work through L, and Will's actually really helping him through it. And I got to say, I don't know how you guys are sitting with this, but I'm still such a huge fan of Noah Schnapp. I think he's incredible.
He's so good.
Isn't he? Like among like the kids, other than one other, he's far and away the best. Mm-hmm. But anywhoozle. Yeah. So
who's the one other?
Sadie.
Yeah. Okay. It's Sadie Sink. I think it's the best.
You think she's better than Noah?
I do. Yeah, I do. Okay. I think she's got some really nuanced stuff.
She's definitely got way more to work with this season than Noah.
Yeah, that's.
And I've seen her in other things is what I'm going by, too. Like, I'm still like, she blew my mind in Fear Street. I didn't know, you know, that was a thing. So anyway, yeah, then John comes. So they all kind of come to this realization at once. Like, hey, the only one that can actually do anything is 11. Right. And we always kind of help. So whatever they're doing in there, that's going to not work. So we need to get out of here. And it's hilarious, but it's also correct, right?
We got to get ourselves out of this problem.
Because, you know, it seems silly, like they have this like psychotic issue of like wanting to get involved. But then the way that Will explains it, you know, Dr. Owens is a great guy. He couldn't help me. Like zero. You guys are the ones that saved me.
Right.
And it's like, he's got a point.
Yep. He's 100% right.
If they had just sat back and let Dr. Owens help Will in season 2, Will would not be here. So they better get out of there.
If this town had literally just sat around and allowed the government to do with the government's work.
Yeah.
Chaos. 11 would be in jail, like still being worked on. There'd probably be Demogorgons eating everybody. It would not be a good
chaos. Absolute chaos. And let the kids fix it. And then we cut
back. We are living in that timeline.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
The world will be saved by Gen Z.
We are Hawkins without an 11 in the real world. Cut back to Max writing her letters. So she's basically writing all these goodbye letters and getting things off of her chest, right? All of her making amends, all of her deep, dark secrets that she's preparing to die, which is a very sad thing to watch like a 16-year-old go through or whatever, right? Very sad. 15, I'm not sure. Very sad. Probably 15.
Mm-hmm. And that's so just bonkers to think about, like, oh, she's been writing all night. And then when she hands you a letter, how would that make you feel if, like, you knew your friend's life was in danger? Like, here, I wrote you a thing. Don't open it until I die. I'd be like, oh, that's such an impossibly hard situation to be in.
Yeah.
And I think it was played really well because there's this comedic element to it just by nature of how funny Dustin, Lucas, and Steve are all the time. But also it's...
Won't look at her when she goes to hand them the letter.
Oh, yeah, I'm just chilling over here.
You can look at me now. Oh, thank God.
But it's also weighty, you know, and I think it's balanced really well tonally. We cut back to Robin and Nancy with Dr. Hatch, and Robin is dressed up in really frilly clothing that she is not a fan of. She's actually being really dramatic about it. I'm breaking out in rashes. My boobs hurt or whatever. I don't have any experience with that, obvi. And then, you know, the turtleneck part's choking me. I hate this. And Nancy's like, chill out. We got to do this. And then Robin goes on this tirade in Dr. Hatch's office. And to Nancy's chagrin, right? Nancy thinks she's about to blow it, but she goes on this like ADHD tirade of perfection. And I don't know about you guys, it's helped by the music that they intentionally play during that speech. Mm-hmm. I was actually inspired. Like, there's a really cool element to this. Like, as funny as it is, you know, she's lying, you know, she's hamming it up, and it's all part of the plan. But at the same time, if that speech was in a different movie about a young lady in the 70s who wanted to be a psychologist, I would be inspired.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, so because
she's that effective. She's like, she says something like, you know, if, you know, crybaby Petey
McHugh
went in here and he asked to see him, you would let him in right away because he's a man.
Yeah.
And like, it was like, 100%.
Yeah. Dr. Hatch is like, shit. All right, let's go. I got 30. Let's take 30. And he tells his little dud secretary outside, he's going to be back in 30 minutes.
I just love that when the speech is affecting and they go and he's like, you know what? Yeah, let's go interview the guy. And they're like, yeah, you know, that one professor, what was his name? Professor, Dick Butt?
Dick Butt.
Brantley, Brantley, we feel like we do better if we did it alone. Is that cool? You can leave. And he's like, okay. And lets them do it. And I'm like, never mind the inspiration from that speech. Like, they just acted shadier than the shadiest of shade. That was Slim Shady. And he just went along with
it. Did I say Bradley? I meant Brantley. Sorry.
He didn't go along with it.
Well, he did though. He let them talk to her and then he went and called and checked the reference or whatever.
Well, he didn't want to let them cue them in that he was on to them or they would flee. He thought he had busted some spies, right? And he tells the guard, keep an eye on him. It's the guard that fucks up. Because the guard's like, absolutely, we'll keep a very close eye.
He gives him like the nod, the secret handshake, like we got some fraudsters, and the guard's like, got it.
100%, Doc.
100%, I take a break in five.
100%, I take a break in five. Because what he says, I have something very urgent to attend to, it's to call Dr. Brantley.
For sure, but so he's
not fooled in the slightest by their ruse.
He gave them what they wanted, though, which is what blows my mind.
Yeah, but he didn't know they were so fleet-footed.
Actually, never mind, I'm going to go check these references before you can talk to Vic.
Sure. Well, that would have been terrible for the plot and Max would be dead. So Big, I don't know what daddy. You want, Andy.
I know it was the 80s, but you know, my ex dealt with a lot of institutional issues like that. And it was like when they were giving him all that spiel, I was laughing like, this is super inspirational and I'm loving these characters, but this would never fucking happen at all.
In the 80s, maybe.
Yeah, in the
80s. There was way less HIPAA. I don't even know if that was a thing.
Yeah, in the 80s, if you went to someone and were like, I have schizophrenia, they'd be like, run under a cold tap. I don't know.
Yeah. Here's a washcloth. A dry one.
How about we have a moist towelette? You have a good day now.
You say you hear voices, huh? How about we electrocute you a couple times a day?
Yeah, and here's a Heath bar.
Yes.
We cut.
I'm cured.
Speaking of Heath bars, we cut back to Yuri. That's where we meet Yuri. And I love this scene. I think it's brilliant because there's like a double subversion there, and I could be reading too much into it. So Yuri pops out of the plane and there's like this horror music playing, and he's a little domineering because he has the welding mask on, right? So it's like this sinister figure. And then he lifts it up and he's this goofball and he makes a bunch of jokes. So what they do intentionally is, oh my God, he's scary. Actually, he's really cool. Meanwhile, he is a villain. So that whole subversion when you first meet him disarms you completely as to any suspicions that he might be amid, right? Am I right? Like that's
kind of 100%. You immediately think, oh, this guy's a lovable rascal.
Yeah.
I love this little Russian scamp.
Oh, this is funny. He's so goofy.
Enzo's cool. So this guy must be cool too. Yeah.
Right. And in fact, he is not cool. So then we cut to more of the Hopper bust. The rest of it, in fact, you know, he has this whole plan hatched and he breaks his pickaxe thing. And then he goes into the shed to get a new pickaxe, beats the shit out of that guard. Takes way too long getting his shackles off. It's unfortunate that the other guy that's kind of been suspicious about him the whole time runs in there.
Nosy Putin.
They have a great like Chad Stahelski, I don't know, David Leitch kind of Atomic Blonde fight that's really tense in that shed. And then he ends up finding some fucking clutch dynamite in there. Thank goodness. And because when all the other guards rush in, he's able to climb out of the roof, get out of there, blow them all up, and then get on this like James Bond jet ski, snow ski thingy.
Oh, thank fuck for that thing, too. Oh,
God. And the keys are in it. Goodness gracious.
That explosion was enormous.
I love that because I expected it to like scare them, and it just killed them all. And I was like, oh, neat.
Yeah.
Aww, and you even see one of them go flying off to the right. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Heath Ball.
Oh, real quick, kind of, I want
to, before you say anything, I just want to point, I'm sure you caught this. I didn't know this, but now it's a fact. Did you know that all the stormtroopers in Star Wars are actually Russian? Because holy shit, they were like 20 feet from Hopper on that thing, and they all missed, not a bullet. I mean, they were literally from here to Steve's car at the farthest point. 16 AK-47s. Damn it!
Wearing too much plot armor.
I just wanted to write that because I wrote Russians are stormtroopers. Anyway, what were you going
to
say?
No, Steve? I was going to write down kind of backing up to the Yuri scene.
Back it up, Steve.
I just really wanted to. That scene was so fun in that I kind of was like, I really hope there's a Murray Yuri spinoff because
Murray Yuri.
The way they had that little like
Yuri Murray, Murray,
Murray, Yuri, Murray, Yuri Murray. And then Murray's like, I do not like him.
Yeah.
Like, because in any other scenario, Yuri's acting very similarly to how Murray acts. They're kind of similar in the way they kind of act around.
Sure.
And so I just kind of like their heads butting. And then obviously things go for a bad turn near the end. But for a second,
somehow I feel like they're not going to be friends. Yeah.
I was like, oh, is this going to be the new Alexei?
No,
It's not.
R.I.P. Smirnoff. Way to bring that up, Steve. Making me sad. And then we cut back to another great scene. I don't know how we're going to putting this for real. I just don't. We cut back to Max, and she's going around delivering all her letters to be discovered later. And she sees her mom. Seeing it a second time was great because I didn't really get fully everything. But she sees her mom outside hanging the laundry, and she's like, oh, you're supposed to be at work. Oh, they gave me the day off, so I'm catching up on some chores. And they have a great exchange that eventually turns into, of course, it's Vecna shitting on her about the things she's already guilty about. And it's terrifying. So the mom was never there. She's definitely not. She actually is working, right? So it was this whole, at some point, as soon as she turned the corner of the trailer, she blacked out and was in a Vecna vision. I just thought that was really cool, you know, because I was kind of watching it last night and zoning out it. And I was like, oh, when did the mom it
last night? Huh?
Right. When I'm being honest, Andy, I'm not going to let you Vecna my guilt.
Andy, did you watch this last night?
No, sir. Steven, did you watch it last night?
I did not. I played by the rules here.
Weird.
Weird how Chris has seen it twice.
Do you feel like it's diminishing returns, though?
I had an incident.
The sudden Vecna pop-ups in the middle of a scene and like, There's a conversation and then it turns dark in the middle of a sentence and now we're in the spooky. No, because this is like the
certainly not in this case.
Third or fourth time that it's happened. And so,
yeah, but this is the only time we've cared.
Yeah.
Like this is Max. And it took me by surprise because it should be diminishing returns. But I thought,
took you by surprise the second time you saw it.
Yeah. I thought that was her mother. You know what I mean? So it was like, that was clever. Whereas like every other time before this, the cop really was there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess this is the first time where it's just the person that they're seeing is like
the whole situation's completely fabricated. Yeah.
I was a little confused because later on in the episode, Lucas says like, hey, what happened with your mom back there? Like he actually specifically says your mom to her. And that, cause I thought, oh, it's just a vision. Vecna wasn't there. But then when Lucas said it, I was like, wait, was she there? Or did she just said like, I had a run in with my mom. She's a bitch.
I mean, it's just the two of them that live there.
Yeah. I just took it as I'm going to go drop this letter off for my mom. And then she comes out really upset. Okay. And so Lucas is like, what happened with your mom?
Okay. That was a really good scene. I love how essentially like she gets tricked into hugging the monster and then, oh, that's not my mom. It's a gross Rudy man.
Yeah. And the reason he doesn't kill her there is because he needs to feed on the guilt, right? He's playing with his
perimeter.
Yeah. And then we cut back to Robin.
Don't like, be gross, Tammy.
Yeah. Andy alluded to earlier, Robin gives it away by saying Dr. Bradley instead of Dr. Brantley when they're talking to Dr. Hatch. But then they go in to talk to Victor Creel. But real quick, we cut back to Mike. And Mike was really good in this episode, as much as I like to dislike him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he apologized to Will. He seemed really grounded. And hey, I need you to be friends with me if we're going to get through this. I miss you, buddy. You're my best friend. You know, I think I've just been really selfish. And
guys, what's happening on the board? Is that a one on the on the episode since Mike was a dick?
Yep. He's got a full one on this. Let's see if we can make it to two.
Come on, you guys.
Did you notice that Hello. They're packing up to get ready to leave. They're going to have this plan to have Argyle come deliver them pizza, quote unquote, and then bust out and go to Hawkins. But did you notice that after their little conversation, Mike and Will, they're like, yeah, we can be best friends again. Yeah, best friends. And Will's like, you know what? I'm going to grab this poster I made.
Yeah.
I'm really interested to see.
What I didn't catch that. Is.
Yeah, he grabbed the poster and put it in his bag. So I'm
really excited to see his painting.
Yeah, yeah, it's gonna be like.
What if it's trash? It's like two stick figures.
It's gonna be like them both shirtless with Mike's arms wrapped around
on a horse. Yeah. Like the what's that? The Putin picture.
Oh yeah.
Anywho,
so what do you think?
And then we get an action scene of that was a oneer, right?
There was an extended oneer in it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just the action part of it. I think all the way until, when the shooting starts until Argyle cuts to Argyle, I think is one take, I think with hidden cuts.
There's definitely a couple of longer takes in there. At least one significantly long one. It's fucking rare.
Yeah. Yeah. That scene took me so much by surprise. Dude,
I literally turned. I was like, this dude's bad fucking ass.
Like, well, not just that. Like, his skill was funny because he was such a dud before that.
Yeah.
But and now he's John Wick. Yeah. But just that in general in this show was so atonal.
You don't get like shootouts like that in Stranger Things. Not at,
it's usually stormtroopery, dun dun, boom boom. But that was like a really accomplished action scene.
Yeah, it was very intense. It was a big wonder. You're following the kids. It's like bullets are flying. You see people, you know, military dudes breaking in, and fucking Paunch or whatever his name is mowing people down with his pistol, and he's like, "Yeah, behind me, bang 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 bang."
I don't
take cover. So what?
I shoot, you run.
What happened there? Is that the Lieutenant Colonel's men?
That's the other government.
So they just said, fuck it, go in there, shoot all the children with a machine gun?
I think they're under the impression that, I don't know if they know.
Like, what's the plan?
I don't think they know that Dr. Owens is working against them. So in their mind, Eleven's there, and they're busting down the door because they need to fucking kill her because they think she's she's the monster, right?
Yeah. Right.
And so they're like, oh shit, there's a bunch of
shoot all the kids quick because they have powers.
Yeah. Also, oh shit, there's other military dudes here. Fuck them up too.
So question. Huh. So the Lieutenant Colonel is against Dr. Owen. When Dr. Owen was interviewing Eleven in the diner in the previous episode, was he not standing outside the diner?
No, like, that's not him.
Leaning against the car?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay.
No. That's the guy that was ordering the pizza in this episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Paunch.
Mm-hmm. Or John.
Or John.
John.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just want to throw that out there because it was like, it seems like they really turned up their heat quickly as far as the other factions concerned. Like, that's why that shot. And I loved how they set that up because he had just called Argyle and you hear the tires screech and then, oh, pizza got here quick, well, 30 cool. minutes or less.
And it looks like the buyers are having a party without me. That's not cool, buyers. Come on.
That was so good.
And it comes out of nowhere. And I love the little soldier dude, like, hello there. And then like start shooting him and shit. Like,
yeah.
Didn't he say hello? And then
he does some weird little one.
Action movie shit, yeah. Got your number.
Fuck, let me try that again. Don't lose your head.
John, yeah. Did you just say got your number?
No.
I manually.
He opens the door. Pizza time.
Extra sauce.
30 minutes or death.
Nice. Write that down.
I loved Argyle in the scene though. This the where's that guy got a gun? And they're just yelling, drive.
Yeah. It's reminiscent of Hopper getting Joyce to drive the car. Cut back to Yuri's betrayal. And there's this really extended, I don't know, Tarantino-esque scene where he gets to gloat over the phone for some reason. He wants to do that because he's a goofball. But there's a wonderful shot in this scene. Again, I don't know why I was so smitten by it. So Enzo's on the phone, on the payphone, and he's, I think, holding it with his left hand, staring out at the road. And then when he realizes that it's Yuri, he hears Yuri's voice. He's like, hello, this is Yuri, you know, his little NoHo Hank voice. The camera spins 180 degrees around Enzo as he's shifting to his right shoulder and right hand. And it was like this intentional visual, the whole world has changed. Mm-hmm. Like something's wrong. You were super happy with yourself. You did it successfully. Hopper got out. Holy shit, this is great. And then there's like this, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This visual cue. I thought it was just chef kiss.
Something's changed. So
Duffer Brothers.
They make the camera illustrate that. It was visual storytelling.
It was a beaut, man. Mm-hmm. It's almost like this is a visual medium and they're very good at it.
Right?
Wow, Sean Levy.
Wow.
Wow. So yeah, Yuri's betrayal, you know, Hop gets in the church successfully, which I guess we can extrapolate was part of the plan because there was keys under the rock, and he finds some peanut butter and it's heartbreaking because he, you know, he's been in there for 6 months. He's been eating slop and hard bread for 6 months.
David Harbour's acting in that scene where he pulls the peanut butter out and puts it in his mouth and just the fucking relief of just such a small convenience, like Jiffy peanut butter. Mm-hmm. The acting is really, really good in that scene.
Super good. And even with the subtitles on, they caught it too because it says emotional gasp.
Mm. I thought it Mom's read like you. Really good acting.
But it was so heartbreaking because he's this like invincible, tough man in every other season, right? And he's like barefoot, shaven, gaunt, like licking peanut butter off his dirty fingers and then like sitting in a bed on the floor, a mattress on the floor, covering his little feetsies with a blanket and hunkering and like just terrified looking all around the room. It was heartbreaking. Really, really well done.
Yep.
I fucked up. I didn't ask you guys for your overall thoughts on this episode prior to us doing the recap.
Well, it's good.
It is good.
I honestly think this is one of the best episodes in the entire show. I'm just floored by how good it is.
It's definitely my favorite of this season for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Okay, we're on the same page again. Thus wow, far. Guys.
Yeah.
And we're writing a book, my dude.
So we cut back to Max in the cemetery. We're getting towards the end. Max is in the cemetery. She wants to make amends to Billy as well and read him her letter. And then Lucas, before she does that, makes a speech. Hey, I don't want your fucking letter. Talk to me. I'm your friend. You know, whatever else happens, you can tell me anything you need to tell me now. I'm here. I'm right here. Mm-hmm. Or anytime. Right.
This is another moment of, man, I'm so glad Lucas is going this way. Because early on, I was really worried.
Like, yeah, because he's been such a good character all throughout. That would have been too hard to bear.
And I think this is the best Lucas has been in the show as well. I can't remember the actor's name. Do you remember Lucas's actor?
Caleb something.
Whatever. This is like the best work he's been doing, I think.
McLaughlin?
Yeah. I think
is it that's Caleb right. McLaughlin?
Yeah. I think this is the best work he's been doing the whole show. Because, I mean, just you instantly connect with his plea of like, I'm here. Talk to me. Tell me. We've all had that situation where, you know, a friend's struggling, but they can't really voice why. And you just so much want to shake him by their shoulders and be like, I'm here for you. I will do anything you want. Let me help you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he gets that across so well. And Sadie Sink is just crushing it so hard.
Yeah, I mean, it happens a little bit later after the Victor Creel story, but eventually she gets to read her letter to Billy And I, that's where I think she's just really almost spilled a water.
Don't get hot. Don't get hot, man.
Killer reflexes.
Thank you.
Reflexes of a Jedi.
I just think like her, the subtle nuances of her performance sitting there at that gravestone, were just powerful.
Yeah, reading
but first,
the
we do get Victor's story. What did you guys think of finally seeing the Robert Englund reveal? And, you know, what were your thoughts on all that?
Creel exposition.
Exactly.
It was wonderful.
It was creely really good.
It was creely good.
Boo.
No, it was awesome. It was great to get to see Robert Englund do a little horror thing. And he was very much playing the victim. And the dude that they cast to play like flashback him, like, looked dead on. That was awesome.
I've seen him in a bunch of stuff, that actor.
Really?
But yeah, okay. In this case, it was like, holy shit, that's a young Robert Englund.
Really doesn't look like him. That's pretty cool. But yeah, no, I thought it was great. Steve, what'd you think?
I liked it. It was probably, I wouldn't say it's the weakest part of the episode, but it was a little, for me, it didn't live up to my expectations just because it was a little too exposition-y for me. Mm-hmm. But I really don't know how they kind of get around that of him. He has to have some sort of exposition in the scene, right? To kind of show you what
the only thing that really, really bothered me was like, because his whole like eyes being cut out was really shocking and cool. And they actually did a cool like, I don't know. It was kind of a dolly zoom at one point with a blur effect. I don't know, but it was, I don't know that much about like that aspect of filmmaking, but it was neat. But I was like, oh my God, like Vecna like got his eyes, but didn't finish the job. Or how did that happen? I was really curious about all that. And then you find out that him cutting his eyes was like a really ineffective suicide attempt. I tried to join my children, but and then like it shows him slicing his eyeballs. It's like, why? You could have sliced literally anything else and been more effective. And what? Like, that's how he lost them? And
oh, my God, this is a really bad idea. And oh, like, my God.
That's like,
why am I doing this?
That's twisted and neat, but like not in the sentence like that visual is showing when he's saying that he tried to, you know, if he just like went mad, that's different than I tried to end it. Mm-hmm. So you're really bad at ending it, sir.
Yeah, and
now you're just blind.
Am I mistaken in saying and I did
it's
you say
so much worse now?
I still think that there's a chance that he had something to do with it. And like I keep,
you gotta murder your darling.
Well, that's the thing is he mentioned his son was in a coma and died a few days later.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, didn't your son's eyeballs pop out and then all of his bones break? And then he fell into a coma?
I was confused by that, too.
Yeah, so I don't know. I feel like there's definitely some more questions there that need to be answered from Mr. Old Victor Creel.
And how did he know the music was helping? And
he didn't.
I don't know. He just heard.
That was Robin's genius, like, parsing through what the information they had been given. He said, I heard the voice of an angel. And then he hummed it and, you know, he'd been too reminded of the events of the trauma and was just humming that song.
And Ella Fitzgerald is the voice of an angel.
Indeed.
That's all.
Dream a little dream of me. And so, and that was actually a clip from the song.
Chris out here with the voice
I think
of
we're
an
done
angel.
With Victor. I think that's the Robert Englund cameo. I think we got the origin. We'll find out more about those events, but not that. I don't see any way that he could have been the cause because we still have to anchor the nefariousness in the Upside Down. The Upside Down certainly has nothing to do with magic and it certainly has nothing to do with Victor Creel. It's just a place that exists.
Mm. But he kind of brought up something that I thought was interesting, and that was just the town literally is cursed because he said there's a curse upon this town. There's a curse upon my house. And then it cursed my family.
There was a beautiful line, like literally speaking, when he says, I guess all evil literally. Needs a home.
What did he say?
He said, I guess all evil needs a home.
Yeah, that was a really good line.
It just sounded cool is all I'm saying. Now, I don't know. I mean, there's like Andy pointed out the Amityville homage that all of this and that whole Victor Creel exposition dump was just kind of an homage to me, which is why the exposition part didn't bother me because it was all James Wan-esque, you know what I mean? Like I was just like, oh, neat. We're in The Conjuring now. This is cool. This is Amityville. This is great. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know, guys. There could be more to it.
I don't think we're done with him. We're going to have a little Hannibal Lecter moment. We're going to come back to the cell. I think.
Yeah.
I feel.
So then that's the whole Victor Creel thing. And then the Dear Billy aspect goes dark quickly because Billy himself walks out in a Vecna vision and accosts Max. And what I think was an incredible scene. Daycare Montgomery.
Good old daycare.
He's awesome. But like just the whole hammering at home of how guilty she feels and just his whole monologue with that like voice modulation that they put underneath. Mm-hmm. Just really, really cool. So good. And then Robin and Nancy run to the car because the security guards at the hospital are super lame and get there just in time to tell Dustin their theory.
I love when Nancy just says, I think we could beat him.
Yeah, definitely. Look back like 100%. You'd have to be.
And then Robin, of course, is like, just so you know, I'm very uncoordinated.
Yeah. Just so you know, I carry out the plan. However, don't be mad at me.
I'm ride or die on Team Nancy, right? But just so you know, there's a high chance I'm going to fall.
And then they save Max with a song based on Robin's theory.
What song was that, Steve?
Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush. Yeah.
Awesome. Beautiful. It's a great song. That is a great song.
And honestly, when they were like, what's Max's favorite song? I know they played the song earlier, so it makes sense that that would be the song that they play. But when I was thinking about, like, you know what? That would be the character Max. That would be her favorite song. It's such a Max song now that I'm thinking about
it. I wish it was something silly.
You spin. Yeah. Oh, my word. Yeah. What is this? It's the Benny Hill song.
I need your love.
That would have been like the Never Ending Story moment instead of the powerhouse moment that it was.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I broke the rules. I'm a terrible person. That was my second viewing. I got chills. I was goosebumping. I was crying. And that was the second time I've seen it in less than 24 hours. So, I mean, that is just a crazy good sequence. And that whole Vecna's lair, there's interesting things going on there. Everybody he's killed in the season so far is like stuck to a tree and I don't know what's going on.
It's
like
he's in the house, but the house exploded, but it's the pieces are still floating up in the air.
Yeah, and there's like a grandfather clock floating around still. And
yeah, that grandfather clock has to be more important than
we certainly have more questions than answers from this episode. I no longer think Victor Creel is even a small bad in this show. You know.
Oh, I don't think he's a small bad either. I just think maybe he might pop up, maybe not in the same context where he's dumping a lot of information.
We might get another moment.
You might see him a couple info. Times. Maybe at the end, if they beat him, you can see him in the cell like, I feel the evil lifted.
I can see again. No, you can't. The other guy next door in the cell. No, you can't. Still blind.
Man. This whole sequence is so great. Everyone was firing on all cylinders. I just want to point out, I think the acting from Joe Carey as Steve was really, really great. Like the panic in his voice. And then that panic kind of slowly seeping into Lucas and Dustin as well. And just there was some real stakes because we've always wondered, when are they going to actually kill off a main character in the show? And for a little bit, it was like, oh my God, are they really going to axe Max?
I was watching it. I was hurting myself with how tense I was because Max is one of my very favorites. And I was just like, they could do it. They could do it.
Not like this.
And then she's floating up and you're like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. But there's a scene. And I was thinking about this too, when I was watching it, Dustin, like such good acting and it's not even Gaten Matarazzo. It's like the blocking that was so great. But Steve's like, go fucking call Robin, right?
Yeah.
And then Dustin like rolls off the little ledge and stumbles. And it looked real, like somebody freaking out, you know? And that would have hurt as an actor. Mm-hmm. So you got to do that 6 times. And I think of the dumbest shit. But I was just, that is really good. Mm-hmm. Wow, you know? Mm-hmm.
And then you hear the song. And then when she comes back and they all kind of like, holder
heartbreaking.
Oh, I'm almost tearing up now.
You're gonna make me cry.
I'm looking at you, guys.
I want to cry too. Because Andy died inside about 2 years ago. He used to be into that.
Yeah, we cut the credits and Andy went boo.
No, I said boo. I want to keep watching. It was boo about having to go record.
That's true.
That moment when they like collapse around her and they hug her, like as an audience member, you're going through that.
They fade to black first to give you a 3 more seconds of did she make it, which is mean.
That was mean.
But yeah, that was such a audience audience member moment where you're just like, yes, I want to hold her too. I want to hold everyone there. Like, I'm just so happy that
I want to hug Steve.
Yeah. Come on, guys. Let's hug it out.
I want to call Robin. Hi, Robin.
What?
Hi.
I just want to talk.
So that's the end of the episode there. Let's cut to our chocolate puddings. What is your top three favorite moments of this baller episode? Andy, you're number three.
So initially I had written down meeting Yuri, and then he revealed himself to be a
cross that off,
and so it ruined it for me, because when
he
died by polar bear and it broke his heart and stuff, and he loves bears, and I was like, I love this guy, and I was like, never mind, don't love this guy, cross it off. So then
you don't get no pudding, Yuri.
Robin's impassionate speech, and I think the music was doing some heavy lifting there, but just the acting by Maya Hawke in that moment was great. And it was like, you know, jumping off the plan, and you're sitting there and like kind of on Nancy's side, like, shut the fuck up, you're gonna ruin it. And she starts talking about like, my fucking neck and my boobs hurt and it's like, you're ruining it. But she actually made some beautiful points. And more than anything, I gave it the chocolate pudding because of the acting from Maya Hawke in that moment. Thought it was great.
Yeah. I mean, she's the progeny of two of the best actors ever.
True.
She's going to crush it.
Big facts. That's also my number three. I just really enjoy Maya Hawke. She's great in this role. And I love the pairing of Nancy and Robin. It's such a fun little odd couple. Like, this show has so many odd couple pairings of boys and boys, boys and boys, boys and boys. Oh, we got a girl and a boy. We got a girl. This is the first time we've had like an odd couple pairing of, oh, maybe not, Max and Eleven in season three.
Yeah.
But this is there's a lot more meat to this one, I feel like.
Well, it's like Andy pointed out, I think about it a lot now, you know, years ago, that the Duffers make a point of putting the characters into duos, sometimes in like almost hero and foil form, so that we can bring out different aspects of their personality and stuff. And different ones appear each season. You know, most famously in season two, you got Steve and Dustin. He would have never guessed that, you know. Yeah. We got these different kind of aspects of those characters and different performances out of both of them because of that. And yeah, I was thinking that same thing. Like, now we get Nancy and Robin. I never saw that coming. And you get different aspects of them coming out, you know?
Yep.
My number three is the Hopper busting out of the prison. It's absurd, but it's also, again, it's kind of like gritty and visceral, kind of like a David Leitch film or something like that. You know, some kind of like Atomic Blonde, you know, one of those spy thrillers. So yeah, really Christopher McQuarrie, even, you know, it's like some Mission Impossible shit. Didn't expect that. That's where the $30 million per episode went, boys, right there. Shit like that.
Yeah, well, that should.
Andy, what was your number two?
My number two is the military attacking Will's house. And it just, because it came out of nowhere, and this all of a sudden badass action scene, this one nameless cop, or he has a name, but I don't know which one was which, just all of a sudden this dude's a bad motherfucker, rolls off the couch like, it's fucking pizza time, let's go. And starts
his reaction time is crazy,
dude,
right?
he guns down like seven motherfuckers, and like he knows where to turn and when to turn, and like everything about it felt like John Wick, but on a little bit more of a realism level. It wasn't like
gung fu.
Yeah, it wasn't gung fu. It was just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah.
But, he knew all the entrances. He knew where to turn his back to.
He had scoped every egress. Yeah.
He's a professional.
Dude was doing his job, and he was trying to protect those kids. Like, this nameless hero, he was a bad motherfucker.
Well, they got him in the van. We assume maybe he's going to make it. So that's good.
I want to see him and Murray, their spinoff
project. Yeah.
Ponch and Murray.
Steve, what was your number two?
That's my number two as
mine
well.
Mine as well. Fuck
this,
it.
So we all
know what the number one is.
This scene was so intense, and I think this speaks to how good the number one scene is, that when this scene ended, I literally went, whoo, and turned to Chris and said, that was fucking good.
Well, again, I broke the rules and seen it. So Steve was taking notes, thinking that Argyle was about to open the door. And I hit his arm like, nah.
No, pay attention.
This is important. Things are about to shift.
It was, it's pizza time.
Yeah. Somebody order extra sauce. So all of our number one is Max running to the open gate, open by the music, right?
Yeah. And the return of daycare was a big one for me. That dude's such a phenomenal actor. And something about him walking menacingly towards a protagonist and with a big old soliloquy is pretty wonderful. And that voice modulation.
The voice modulation reminded me a lot of the, like, we've been building it for you.
Yeah.
Like from season three.
And that's one of the best scenes in season three.
Oh, yeah. And he pulled the same thing here where he's like walking deadpan serious face and like has the single tear drop. He did the same thing in that episode. And I was like, fuck, this guy's good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was awesome to get him back. But then, yeah, like the entire thing, like Steve already pointed out, Steve freaking out and like the panic, the slow panic buildup and like the gradual rise of the stakes in that moment were absolutely wonderful. But yeah, daycare coming back was a big one for me.
One thing I want to touch on about daycare is when Max is reading her note, which, you know, she's crushing that role. It's such a, there's not a lot happening. She's literally sitting there reading a letter. It's an actor reading a letter, and she brought so much real heart to it. She's doing like the little kid, like, I'm not crying, I'm getting through this.
Yeah.
Those wipes. But then she also touched on like, because part of the, so the season, this answered a big question for me with the season, which was going into the season, Max and Billy weren't close. In fact, you could argue, you know, they hated it. Billy definitely hated her. And it was just this relationship of her suddenly being torn up about why that he's gone. It's like, okay, I understand he was his brother. There's definitely probably some feelings there, but also, you know, that wasn't a healthy relationship. So her letter, when she's talking it out, really answered a lot of those questions for me that I had personally, where she was like, she's mourning the loss of like the fact that they could not reset. After he saved her life and Elle's life, they couldn't have that moment where they could reset their relationship and possibly become the brother. She's mourning the loss of that possibility.
Yeah.
The loss of what could have been.
Yeah. Less so than maybe the loss of what was actually there beforehand, because she even states like, you hated me. I hated you. And I really liked how honest that was. And it really kind of sold what she's going through for me in the season.
Absolutely. And that's where, to just to cap it off, I think there's this thematic through line to this season that goes far and above anything that they've ever done, which is elevating it for me, of the importance of healing from trauma in a healthy way, the importance of not blaming yourself. And, you know, because not only does the music help, but the music in itself doesn't pull her out. It just opens a door. You know, it's a lifeline to the real world. She has to get out of the Vecna's grasp, has to focus on all the positive memories that she has and think of how she's not alone, all these moments with her friends. And that's true in real life when you're in any dark moment, right? Like Billy talks about like the end of his big soliloquy is that she has in her darkest moments in the middle of the night pondered following him in death, right? So Max has been thinking about killing herself. So this whole season's about mental health and mental illness and people that don't recover from it and what happens and the people that do. So Vecna's curse is just, it's self-loathing. It's depression. It's very real things, right?
That isolation.
And the false isolation that you feel when you're in that headspace.
Yeah.
So I'm just completely and utterly moved by what they're doing with this. Cause I haven't really gotten that sense in any other season. In other seasons, I'm like, oh, it's a fucking mind slayer. It's a monster show. Right. But now I'm like, oh my God, they've done some work with this writing. Very impressed. That's just my take.
I love your takes, Chris.
Thanks, buddy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, anybody have any egos they want to point out?
Yeah, I got a couple. So when they were in the school, when Max was pointing out, like, this is where the clock was, I saw a Halley's Comet, like, information board.
Oh, yeah.
86 was the last time Halley's Comet went through our orbit, and it's not going to happen again until, like, 2061 or something.
Can't wait.
looking forward to that in my 70s. But, yeah, so that was a nice little very specific point in time accurate historical touch.
Yeah,
that was cool
for sure. Well, I'll just throw it out there. Paunch and John is a reference to Chips, the TV show Chips, the two motorcycle cops. Yeah, okay. So that's not their names. That was just Jonathan being clever, like fucking Paunch and John out there.
Okay, I never watched Chips.
That's what that was Chips. And then of course the obvious, you know, Steve McQueen's the Cooler King. We got a Tom Cruise poster.
Yeah, that shot of Hopper riding the snowmobile up the hill is very reminiscent of the shot in The Great Escape when he ramps the motorcycle or tries to ramp the motorcycle over the fence. Like, it looks framed up
the nice same catch. Way.
Yeah.
And obviously they were alluding to that earlier with the Steve McQueen bit.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I'm going to throw an obvious one out there that I'm Silence of the Lambs. I mean, that was pretty dead on when Nancy and Robin are walking by the cells in Penhurst Asylum. But also outside could be still Silence of the Lambs. But I was also getting like Shutter Island vibes like crazy, especially when they were running from the two security guards and, you know, the other, I don't want to call them inmates, the other patients were,
shoe.
I mean, Scorsese really hammed that up in his version.
Mm-hmm. So I got some like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest vibes, especially when the Hatch was saying like, oh, they could leave if they wanted to, like made me think of like Billy Bibbit and stuff and how Nurse Ratchet, Hatch. I was like, his name was Ratchet. No, it was Hatch.
I mean, that could still be a
Hatch, Ratchet, yeah, whatever.
Hatch and Ratchet.
But anyway, when Nurse Ratchet was like, no, dude, Nicholas, no, dude, no, anybody could leave whenever they want to. There was also Erica saying, I want the Nintendo with the Duck Hunt, which is
pretty Erica. Solid,
but that's also low-hanging fruit. Steve, there's a couple like music posters and stuff. Did you catch any of them?
Posters?
Yeah.
You're talking about Nancy's room? Will's room?
Nancy's room, I think. Or maybe
Nancy had the Tom Cruise. I saw a band on the back right of Will's. I think she
also had R.E.M., or was that Will's also? I think
there are a couple posters I saw in the background, but I honestly can't really make them out.
One was definitely an REM poster.
They were out in 86?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Sure were.
We already got the end of the world.
They did a 80s horror zoom out when Max was getting into the car. When they were she said, we want to go to, she said she had somewhere she wanted to go. And then it turns out that it was the cemetery that she wanted to go. But, when she's starting to get into the car and then she starts to hear the clock, it does like for a hot minute after the '80s, it became sort of a faux pas to use Zoom. It's always supposed to be a dolly out. And so Zoom is a very stylistic choice.
Like Raimi does that probably a lot.
Raimi does Zooms a lot, but oftentimes now when Zooms are used in conjunction with a dolly one way or another. But to do just strictly a Zoom is a very stylistic choice, often to try to evoke a certain time frame or a time period of filmmaking, and is used heavily in the '80s. It Follows did it a lot.
Yeah.
But so the zoom out to give a sense of dread and isolation in the moment when she's starting to hear the clock again was a big stylistic choice for sure. And it felt like a little bit of an Easter egg to me. I also saw a Little Shop of Horrors poster in Will's room.
Nice.
Which was pretty cool. In this case, I guess it would have just been the musical. When did the movie come out?
Oh, gosh.
In the 80s?
The movie
was 80s. It was Rick Moranis, okay. So it had to be.
Yeah,
fair. Yeah.
But that's a remake, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I also caught an Elvira poster.
Ooh,
in the
I didn't.
In the Russian building where they had all the American stuff. Which
that's
cool.
What that was. Okay, yeah. That's an example of the poster. I'm like,
oh, like with the cigarettes and peanut butter and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So that was just their little American church.
Yeah,
The Church of.
I love that. That's where they can stash it. Nobody in that town like goes to worship.
Yeah,
they're like, it's definitely safe in here. Lock this up.
And then the last one that I had was a pretty obvious one when. Max is in the upside down Vecna graveyard. There's really only one grave that you can read, and it's big and obvious to read, and it just says Myers. So it felt like a Halloween reference.
I didn't notice that. It was big and obvious as it was, I didn't read it. Yeah. And this is a weak one, but it had to be intentional. I think Apocalypse Now. When Yuri smells the cash.
I love the smell of cash in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wondered if that was that too.
Has to be an Apocalypse Now reference, right?
For sure.
Is that all the egos that we got?
There was the songs. Obviously, we talked about Dream a Little of Me by Ella Fitzgerald. There was also Pass Me Dutchie by Musical Youth, I think is the name of the band that sings that song. And then I wrote this number down. It's a door number, but for the life of me, I'm staring at this and I can't remember where it was in the show, but there's a room number 109.
That was the hotel that Murray and Joyce were.
Okay. Staying. Yeah. I believe that's a room number that's important in the Silent Hill games.
Okay.
That's a hotel room.
Really?
I think so.
Where they open the door and it's the dog and he's like, it was you all alone.
I think so. If I'm not, I could be mistaken. This is like something I'm like.
And I wrote this one down for you, Steve.
Silent Hill 2.
Oh, is it Silent? Yeah, it is definitely Silent Hill 2, where they have the dog ending or whatever. I saw not just a Pop-Tart, but an old Pop-Tarts box for the chocolate Pop-Tarts. And I was like, Steve.
Oh, man. Chocolate Pop-Tarts. I haven't heard of those in a while. Do they sell chocolate Pop-Tarts still?
I don't know. Like, there's like the fudge ones that are like, but that was just like a normal Pop-Tart, but with like chocolate.
Yeah. I get the s'mores Pop-Tarts all the time.
There's a short film called Room 109, and it's a horror short, you know, a new apartment that he later finds out is haunted. That was from 2016 though. So that's interesting.
Is it made by the Duffers?
No.
Executive producers, the Duffer Brothers.
I don't know what that, but it's got to be something. Maybe it's like a common trope, the 109s, if it was also in Silent Hill.
Yeah, maybe.
But anyway, that brings us to the best, most popular portion of our show, the reading of the Stranger Things Mad Lib we created.
Yes, and this... yes!
Well, this just popped up, Silent Hill 2, Blue Creek, Apartment Room 109, so it's definitely a thing.
Hell yeah. I remember things.
I'm a good boy.
But this episode's Mad Libs is entitled, Will, are you there? Let's find out if he is. I know he's out there. I can feel it in my feet. My intelligent son is alive, and I don't care what Jim Smith fucks or anyone else in this town thinks. Jim Smith fuck. I heard my Will smack into the phone. Ew. I know it was him. I'm 420% sure of it. But the phone, that lonely phone, got zapped again. I felt so hopeless, but then I noticed the geese started to flicker. I'm telling you, it was a sign. They started menstruating and flashing, and I know what sounds fierce, but I think he's trying to use them to throw me. Don't believe me? I've got every strand of Christmas geese I could find strung up in the living room. From the living room to the ocean room. My whole house looks like Santa's Tudor home. Will! Are you there, Will? If you're here, please relax.
Well, relax.
Blink once for yes and twice for Heath Bar. Confound it all. Did you toss that? It blinked. He's here. I need more friends.
Well done. Well done. One of the best ever. Well, thank you for tuning into Chapter 4. We got to go because we got to watch Chapter 5. That's all the time we have right now. My name is Chris.
And I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. Rate and review the show.
Do it.
Do it.
Do it now.
Hello, my name is Yuri, and I will be indoctrinating you into Soviet mindset. Prepare to open your mind and receive thanks from the motherland. I would like to thank Phil for your contributions. Thank you, Carmelita. Thank you, Kerry. Thank you, Enza. We will be in contact with all of you shortly. Thank you, Cake.
Thank you, Cake.
Thank you, Cake.
Cake is delicious, but not this cake. She is person. Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Jimmy. Oh my goodness. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Elo.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Shay. Thank you, Stephen the Fifth, a former czar of the motherland. And thank you, A. Wells. Tune in next time for us to give thanks to true communist power where we crush the American capitalist pigs!
Thank you so much, Yuri, for joining the show.
Thanks.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/ upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.